Today, we're focused on chronic health hazards such as asthma and other sort of long-term, more subtle sorts of diseases. And so the question before us is, what are the housing changes we need to make to eliminate those chronic disease outcomes? And that's exactly what the HealthR study is trying to get a handle on.
Hello and welcome to Season 1 of the Breathe Easy Home podcast. If you or your family suffer from asthma, allergies, or COPD, do you feel better when you're at home? Well, you should. Most of us spend over half our time at home, and that makes our indoor environment just as important to our health as the outdoor environment. In 2015, Breathe Easy Home created its indoor air quality system. Using the latest technology and best practices from the home improvement industry, this system upgrades your home to reduce asthma and allergy triggers. By avoiding triggers, you should feel better. In 2016, the National Center for Healthy Housing, a national leader in housing research, initiated the HealthR study. This study will test the effects of the Breathe Easy Home indoor air quality system on asthmatic children. Season 1 of this podcast follows the progress of the HealthR study. Season 1 of the Breathe Easy Home podcast is brought to you by the National Center for Healthy Housing, building a healthy home environment for all children. By EcoBico, comfortable, energy-efficient homes in a healthier way. And by Minix, efficient homes, healthy living. Thank you for joining episode 4 of the Breathe Easy Home podcast. Today's topic is the scientific evidence, why the trial is likely to work. We will discuss the scientific principles and previous academic studies that have been done looking at housing and childhood asthma. These studies were used to develop the HealthR study, which stands for Housing and Energy Attributes Linked to Health Through Retrofits. The HealthR study examines the link between enhancing indoor air quality and reducing childhood asthma symptoms. To learn more about the HealthR study, please visit www.healthyhomestudy.com. My name is Brian Toll, and I am with a nonprofit organization called Breathe Easy Home. I am joined today by David Jacobs, Chief Scientist for the National Center for Healthy Housing, and also the Principal Investigator for the HealthR study. Dave was also our guest on episode 1 of this season, and if you've not listened to episode 1, I recommend that you hit the stop button right now and listen to episode 1 first, then come back to this episode. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Brian.
Dave, can you tell us a little bit about the National Center for Healthy Housing?
The National Center for Healthy Housing is a research and training organization devoted to the idea that all Americans should have healthy homes. We basically do research that we think is policy relevant, that will move the needle in the country, so that instead of wasting money on simply medical care, that is treating people after they get sick, we examine some of the root causes. In our case, we look at inadequate housing and the dire health consequences as a result.
Great. And can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I am a research scientist by training. I directed at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, an office devoted to lead poisoning prevention. And then in 1999, we sent a report to Congress that said we should apply the lessons from lead poisoning prevention to other housing-related diseases and injuries. Congress funded that program and has been funding it ever since. So we are hopeful that the experience that we bring to bear from science will be used to guide not only government policy, but also policies from financial institutions and others who have a say in how our housing is constructed, renovated, and built.
So let me start by repeating the last question I asked you in episode 1. What is the hypothesis that the HealthR study is trying to prove?
Again, the main hypothesis really is that as a result of these home improvements, we believe that we can document improvements in self-reported health. We will document improvements in indoor air quality, and we will also be able to document improvements in medical care utilization. That is, by addressing some of the root causes of poor health, that is, inadequate housing, we can reduce the medical expenditures as well as, of course, needless pain and suffering. The study will have two groups. One will be a group of homes that get the interventions, that is, the building improvements. And then a second group will not get the improvements, but will only get education. Both groups will get education on what parents can do to make their homes healthier. So both groups will participate and benefit from the study, but as in most research, we want to do the variables so that we can understand what the effect of the intervention actually is.
So can you tell us a little more about how the Health R study is different than studies that have already been done?
The Health R study is going to use a much larger set of robust measurements. So we will be looking at repeated measures of indoor air quality, roughly about every season. We'll look at it before, immediately after the intervention, that is the building improvements, and then at about every 4 months thereafter for a year. We'll also be doing self-reported health outcomes, and then we'll be comparing those metrics to the control group. So this study will also be focusing on a group of houses that really has not been examined previously. And those are houses that are occupied by middle-class homes. Most of the studies that I'll talk about in a moment have been done in low-income, subsidized, federally assisted housing. So we don't really have good data to demonstrate whether these interventions are effective in the vast majority of America's homes, that is, middle-class single-family homes. And so this study will, I hope, move the needle and document what those improvements actually are. Now, of course, we don't actually know whether the improvements will work. We think they will based on some of these earlier studies. But if we knew the answer to this, we wouldn't do the research. So I believe that this study will have a large impact on how we do both our housing and our health policy and financing systems to save the nation money and to reduce needless pain and suffering from illness.
So maybe we can go back in history a little bit and talk about some of the previous studies that the center's been involved with and some other academics have done, and what those studies have told us and how that shaped what we're doing today.
Sure. There have been a number of studies. One of the first ones we did was back it was in Minnesota in 2011. But basically, this was a three-building multifamily housing development, all low-income, mostly occupied by meatpacking families, actually. And what we did was basically use enterprise green community standards in the rehab of those buildings. And then we documented what the results were, mainly through questionnaire, but also through some air sampling and ventilation measurements. So that study showed that there was a large improvement in the ability to clean, in comfort, in whether the home itself was safe and also whether the neighborhood was safe. And also it documented major improvements in children playing outside. Some of this is not actually rocket science. Part of the rehab involved children getting a new playground. So they played outside more, and that means it could have an impact on things like obesity and other factors. We also showed in that study that general health basically doubled as either very good or excellent. That increased from 33% to 62%, and that was statistically significant. We also basically wiped out chronic bronchitis, drastically reduced hay fever, sinusitis. Asthma went from 12% to 4%, and hypertension also declined from 10% to 4%. So those results I just mentioned were for adults. These were basically 1 year after the improvement had been done. In children, we didn't quite see the same improvement in general health, somewhat surprisingly. It did improve from 53 to 65%, but it wasn't statistically significant. Children's respiratory allergies did decrease from 15 to 4%. Their ear infections also declined in a significant way, as did eczema. Eczema is a skin disease that we know is often an indicator of skin allergy and asthma. So we have some theories about why that might have been. It could be that adults were not as in tune with children's health as they were with their own health. But that's an area of further research. We also were able to show that in these units, we installed a new ventilation system for each apartment unit so that they got a planned amount of fresh air. And we were able to document that the carbon dioxide levels were below 1,000 parts per million, which is often used as an indicator of how much fresh air is being brought in. All volatile organic compounds were below the minimum risk levels established by an arm of the CDC. We also documented huge improvements in energy and water, a 46% reduction in total energy use, as well as a 39% reduction in CO2 emissions from power plants. Another study that we looked at is in Chicago. This was a large study called Moving into Green and Healthy Housing, the Yield in Health. And basically, this study compared the health status of public housing residents before and after a move from, in some cases, the nation's worst public housing in Chicago into new green, healthy housing. And then that, in that study, unlike the one I just described, we did have a control group of residents that did not move out of their homes. So this was this study covered 320 housing units in three Chicago public housing developments. We had 800 individuals, and we did air quality testing in 45 units. Again, we showed dramatic improvements in both children and adult general health. And in this study, we also documented some important mental health improvements. The rate of sadness, restlessness, nervousness, and hopelessness, or everything being an effort, which is kind of a symptom of depression, all of these improved dramatically, both by looking at the study group before and after, as well as comparing them to the control group. So the mental health aspects of these improvements, I would have to say, is an area that needs further study, and we will be doing just that in the Health R study. Asthma symptoms also improved dramatically. So we measured symptoms, difficulty staying asleep, the number of asthma medications that were used to prevent an attack, as well as how frequently a prescription inhaler was used to stop an asthma attack. All of those dramatically improved in this study. Another study that was done in Seattle also looked at new public housing units. These are so-called breathe easy homes that are targeted to asthmatic children. And in this study, they documented a huge improvement in symptom-free days for every two-week period. They basically had 4.8 fewer days. So that's basically 5 days out of every two-week period these children were symptom-free. That's huge. Furthermore, their use of urgent clinical care trips, that is trips to the emergency room, went down by a whopping 41%. And we all know how expensive an emergency room trip is. They also showed a dramatic improvement of asthma triggers in settled house dust. These are things like cat allergen, cockroach allergen, dust mite allergens, and so forth. And there's also an improvement in caretaker quality of life. So those were critically important studies as well. There have been a few others, but again, all of these studies that I've outlined were done in low-income or public housing or housing that was using federally assisted units, and they were typically not single-family housing but multifamily apartments. So the Health R will fill an important evidence gap in our understanding of these improvements. We also, in most of these studies that have been done to date, they typically have conducted these measures just before the intervention was done, maybe right afterwards, and then a year later. In the Health R study, we're actually going to be looking at these health outcomes more frequently so that we will get a finer grain on what is on how rapidly the improvements actually occur. We will also be looking at medical records related to asthma so that we can document any clinical improvements. Most of these studies do not have important clinical measures, and as we know, the medical world needs clinical measures to ensure that the interventions that they're recommending for their patients are actually sound medicine.
So if the Health R study was successful, what do you think are the implications in terms of medical care and the insurance industry? And what would you say are the limitations of a successful study?
The Health R study actually is a good way of looking at the connection between housing and health. If you think about it, the only reason we have housing laws at all in this country is because of public health problems. 100 years ago, there was a basic change in our housing stock that helped us conquer cholera, typhoid, and tuberculosis. And that was simply the installation of indoor plumbing. So certainly there were better medical interventions that worked, but that change in housing, known as the sanitation movement, had a lot to do with eliminating those communicable diseases in housing. Today, we're focused on chronic health hazards such as asthma and other sort of long-term, more subtle sorts of diseases. And so the question before us is, what are the housing changes we need to make to eliminate those chronic disease outcomes? And that's exactly what the Health R study is trying to get a handle on. We don't really fully understand how we should change our housing stock to make it amenable. We need to focus more explicitly on how we can reduce the cost of both medical care and housing. They go together, after all, if you think about it. People should not have to pick between taking their medicines and paying their rent. So I think what this study is fundamentally about doing is trying to provide the evidence base for, you know, to document which changes in our housing stock are likely to have a benefit in health outcomes. So what exactly should we be doing with our ventilation systems? How do we weatherize homes properly so that the health consequences are maximized? And ideally, in the long run, we hope that physicians and health institutions and others will be able to prescribe a healthy home. A good friend of mine, Dr. Megan Sandell, has come up with the idea that housing can act as a vaccine. And that's exactly what we're trying to do with this study. We'll be able to document the health improvement and understand the costs and the benefits of improved housing and this specific intervention known as the Healthy Home Intervention.
Do you think there are implications for people suffering from allergies, COPD, and other respiratory illnesses that might benefit from this?
I believe that's the case. In fact, asthma has doubled in the last 20 to 30 years. No one fully understands exactly why, but it could be, for example, that our houses have more carpets. They tend to be moister. People spend more time indoors than they used to. And so all of those factors may be playing a role in asthma and other respiratory conditions like COPD. As you know, the nation is embarking on a massive energy conservation program. We kind of went through this once before. I'm old enough to remember the 1970s when the nation went through its first energy crisis. And what we did was seal up homes, but not pay any attention to ventilating them. And that had a variety of poor health outcomes known as sick building syndrome. And yet the fact is that our ventilation standards and our other housing improvement standards are really not driven by health concerns, although they could be. They're driven by, you know, lowest cost or what's feasible. So this study, the Health R study, will help us build the evidence base on how homes can be weatherized, how they can be properly ventilated, how they can be made smooth and cleanable, and other sorts of things so that we can conserve energy and at the same time improve health. Those two things do not need to be opposite of each other. In fact, they can work together. And if we do it in a smart way, the nation can eliminate sources of poor health as well as save lots of money by bending the cost curve for medical care.
So, Dave, in 2010, the National Center for Healthy Housing published what's called the Review of the Evidence that was available at the time. Can you tell us more about the panel that came together to review the evidence and what they found?
Sure. So in previous years, we learned a lot about which housing conditions could be linked to certain health outcomes. But we had not examined if you change something in a house, what's the evidence that it actually works, that is, that it improves your health. So the National Center for Healthy Housing, together with the Centers for Disease Control, brought together a group of international experts looking at things like biological agents, chemical agents, physical agents such as injury hazards, and certain neighborhood-level effects. We published that study, but this was the first effort to understand, to marshal the evidence. Interestingly enough, in 2010, we looked at, the data on ventilation changes and whether that improved health. And we also looked at moisture. And back then, the evidence was pretty scant that if you improved ventilation or controlled moisture, you could, in fact, improve health. The mold and moisture thing is particularly important because in 1999, I was testifying before Congressman Carl Stokes from Cleveland. And he asked me, what is HUD doing? Back then, I worked for the Department of Housing and Urban Development. He asked me, what is HUD doing about mold? And he proceeded to basically explain that in Cleveland, there were something like 25 to 30 infants who had died from mold exposure. That wasn't fully understood at the time. A good friend of mine, Dr. Dorr Dearborn in Cleveland, he's a pediatric pulmonologist. He did autopsies on those infants who had died, and they had been initially diagnosed with SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. In fact, he said, I'm seeing lesions in the lungs. Those lesions are not consistent with SIDS. There's something else going on here. I don't know what it is. So one thing led to another. And finally, the health department decided, well, let's take a look at the houses. And in those houses, it turned out that there was a defective ventilation system. It used basement air as supply air. There had been a flood in that part of Cleveland from Lake Erie, and the so-called black toxic mold, Stachybotrys, had been found growing in the basement. And the theory was that that basement air that was drawn into the air handler distributed the mold spores throughout the house that unfortunately produced a condition known as idiopathic pulmonary hemosiderosis, which is a mouthful for simply saying bleeding lungs. And that's what was thought to cause some of these children's deaths. So the fix was pretty straightforward, simply making sure that you improve the ventilation system so that you don't use that mold-contaminated air in the basement, but use conditioned air and filtered air to resolve the problem. And yet it took a tragedy like that to focus the attention of the nation on these sorts of substandard housing condition. So out of that tragedy in Cleveland came the Healthy Homes movement in this country. Congress has been funding that at about $10 million a year ever since, and we have a lot more to learn. And that's why studies like HealthR, which will look at not only ventilation but also moisture, is such an important contribution to our understanding. There is pretty good evidence out there that if you do control moisture properly, you can in fact improve health outcomes. One review done by Anthony Arendel showed that if you keep humidity between 40% and 60%, you can have dramatic improvements in reducing allergic mite and fungal populations. Fungal populations is mold, basically. We also know that humidity affects a number of other factors. For example, formaldehyde from pressed wood products. If your humidity levels are too high or too low, you can encourage the off-gassing of formaldehyde and actually increase exposures. The same thing goes for nitrogen dioxide, which is an inflammatory agent that in the lungs. So relative humidity and controlling it has important benefits for a number of adverse health outcomes.
So, Dave, if you had a child with asthma between the ages of 5 and 16 and you and your child met all of the study criteria, would you want to participate in this trial?
Well, I'm a scientist, so I love a science experiment. And frankly, in my many years doing research studies like this, I think if the study is properly explained to people, I think they love to be part of it. And so we'll be, you know, residents do get an important benefit by participating. You'll be part of a study that will help the rest of the nation learn more. You'll also get the individual results for your home in terms of what the air quality looks like. We'll help you understand what that's about. We do understand that confidentiality is an important factor, so we will have special measures to make sure that your identity is not revealed. And that's all explained in a very detailed, informed consent process. But absolutely, I would. I have four kids of my own. Kids. I think we need to do a better job of understanding how to make sure that they can grow up to be the best and the brightest they can be. So I would certainly participate in the study, and I hope many of your listeners will choose to do so as well.
And if listeners want to learn more about the study, what should they do?
The best way to learn more about the study is to go to the study website. That's www.healthyhomestudy.com. Once again, it's healthyhomestudy, all one word, .com.
Great. Well, Dr. David Jacobs, thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Follow the Health R study, visit us online at www.healthyhomestudy.com to learn more and to apply. The healthyhomestudy.com website will follow the progress of the study from start to finish. If you have a personal interest in the topic, I recommend signing up for the electronic newsletter by hitting the subscribe button at the top of the page. The Health R study is also supported by April Air, Feel Good Inside, by AeroSeal of Maryland, Duct Sealing from the Inside, Fresh Air UV, Indoor Air Quality and Innovation, the Building Performance Institute, Energy Efficiency, Comfort, Health and Safety, and Durability, Fubot, Meet Your Good Air Guru, and by Breathe Easy Home, Home Improvements for Allergies, Asthma, and Better Health. Thank you for listening to the Breathe Easy Home podcast. You can follow our podcast on www.breatheeasyhome.org/podcast or subscribe on iTunes or through your favorite podcast player. You can also email us at podcast@breatheeasyhome.org.